Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is a podcast from the Smart Material Collective, made by nerds, funded by the listeners.
You know what?
Yes.
When I get this PhD, yes, the way I'm going to come onto this podcast, the first recording we have after this PhD, I'm going to spend a solid 5 minutes just flexing so hard. Oh my God. I'm just going to sit here. Like, all of you are going to be stunned looking at me. The way you will see the levels of... You think I'm cocky now?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
You think I'm arrogant now? Oh my God.
Can I resign from the podcast now?
I mean, you can. I'll come to your house. Mm-hmm. and I will do a live podcast recording. Hello and welcome to Why Aren't You a Doctor Yet? The only podcast that uses cutting-edge science to answer the questions that you really have. Things like, why is the sky blue? What's up with trees? And why does Sahel have a gym bag?
Because I like to nap at the gym.
I mean, really?
And eat donuts.
Yeah? No. What's great is that we don't have our pop filters today for our microphone. Yeah. So Sahel pulled out a couple of socks.
From my gym bag. Yeah.
Do you hear this clarity?
You can't smell it though. That's the thing.
This is important.
Yeah. On my left, I have Hannah Ayoub. Hannah is a wonderful creative producer. She makes really intricate art that you should buy, and she's allergic to Sahel's protein high energy bites.
Because basically the health food industry thinks that protein equals nuts, and that's it.
I mean, yeah, that's true. On my right, I have Sahel Patel. Sahel is an amazing journalist. He makes brilliant content, and he's the owner of multiple socks, stuff inside a gym bag, these Bounce high-protein energy bites.
I've got a lot of things.
Yeah, you know, I mean, yeah, he's got a lot of things. And you might have heard from laughter that sounds a bit bassier. We have a guest with us today. We have Kwesi Kwakwa.
Thank you. You got that right.
I did. Of course I did. Now that we have another Ghanaian on, we're going to hijack this. This,
yeah.
I'm taking this podcast back, okay? All of it back, taking it back. All right, we had this long, drawn-out idea, me and Kwesi, that we'd speak entirely in Twi. Entirely.
Should we just leave?
I mean, you can. That's what this is now.
Yeah, we just, you know, it's the Ghanaian takeover. It had to happen. So. Yeah.
I approve.
I mean, yeah, we don't have Ghana Airways anymore, so we have this.
That, you know, I'm still slightly annoyed about that.
The airline where you had to wait 3.5 hours to get onto your plane.
If you got lucky.
It's good, quiet reflection time.
I think Ryanair manages it less time.
No. Have you ever turned up for a flight at 11 o'clock? The flight was meant to be at 1. You go at 5 o'clock and then you have to pay an airplane tax. Huh?
No, that's kind of messed up. Really? Is that what actually happened?
No. Ghana Airways was, you could show up with a confirmed seat. Like, not just a seat. You had booked it. You confirmed it. You had a seat. And you would be, you'd get to the airport and like, no, I'm sorry. We don't have your seat anymore. What?
Your seat is gone, my friend. Yeah.
No, I saw a woman. I saw a woman in Ghana almost fight someone because she got the ticket.
You know what's the worst airways in the world?
What?
Jet Airways.
From where?
With a 65% on time performance.
Is that not good?
That's quite bad. 65%.
Yeah, that's quite good.
Jet Airways is the worst.
No, that's quite, I mean, that's really good. And like on time.
Yeah. Well, see, I think the problem here is that both of us probably fly to Ghana a lot. Mm. And that skews your perception of what a, because like even British Airways, when they fly to Ghana, are elite. Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, they actually care about you guys, whereas they toss us in the oldest plane they have. And it's like, yeah, we'll wait for a minute and we can kick you off. It's fine.
One other fact, worst airport in the world, Kuwait International Airport. Second worst, London Stansted.
So, Hannah, what interesting things have you seen in the news this week?
So quite a few different articles are claiming that a major study has found that kids who have their tonsils out are way more likely to suffer from chest infections, pneumonia, allergies, asthma, basically everything that causes me, like, you know, problems in life. So I'm like, shit, maybe that's it. Maybe that's like what went wrong, because I had my tonsils out when I was 2.
Why did you have them out, by the way?
Well, this is where it gets tricky, right? Mm. So I had my tonsils out because I kept turning blue from asthma attacks.
That's horrible.
And like kept getting like chest infections. And it turned out, this is like really gross, but like there were abscesses on my tonsils from the like constant infections.
Wait, well, abscesses are?
So like pus, basically.
You had a pussy tongue.
Well, behind the tongue. That's where your tonsils are. So I started thinking, I was like, wait a second, like how can they actually claim that, you know, a group that had their tonsils out, probably for, you know, medical reasons, are more likely to suffer from things that are probably those reasons than people who didn't. I looked into more articles and just like kept finding this like complete sort of like loss of, you know, differentiating between a correlation and an actual like causal link. Like even the paper itself, the scientists are claiming to have like matched people with the same health who had their tonsils out and who didn't. But like these are all Danish kids. So, you know, surely the group that had their tonsils out are by definition, they will have had different health as kids from the group that didn't have their tonsils out.
Yeah.
And it's just like this like, you know, article has been like written about on, you know, loads of science websites, like loads of major news sites. And it's just like absolutely meaningless.
Okay, so what is...
I'm not ranting at all.
No, okay, what... I mean, first thing, I'm really impressed that when you had all these asthma attacks, you went blue.
Yeah.
So like, okay, for a while...
Given that like no one apart from my mum can tell when I blush.
Yeah, exactly. Like, considering like, for a white person to go blue, a brown person to go blue, like...
That's some serious shit.
That's some extra blue.
There is a joke that I spent like most of the first 2 years of my life different colours because I started out jaundiced and then just kept going blue from asthma attacks.
All right then.
You know, we just...
You started out jaundiced? He started out jaundiced and then went blue. What was your health situation like? This is Singapore. I assume you guys.
I was born in England. Okay. So like, yeah, up north. But
oh, the north.
Yeah, the north. You know,
there we go.
As in, a lot of babies are jaundiced.
Yeah.
Okay. And then babies sort of seem to be more likely to go blue when they have asthma attacks than adults.
Okay.
But do you know that we're joking about it, but that's like some serious shit, really, isn't it? That is like genuinely like so.
I generally have to joke about my health, otherwise, I, you know, end up crying in a ball in the corner.
Okay, there, Indian Smurf. I shouldn't call you Indian Smurf. That's problematic, right?
We need the horn. We need the horn.
So, okay. So, what is the difference between correlation and causation?
So. One of my favourite explanations for this is if you're in a town or a city where there are multiple buildings that have sort of clocks that go off, like, you know, chiming clocks or church bells, that sort of thing, you might find that some are slightly delayed compared to others. So, you know, you might find that the church, you know, bells go off and then 30 seconds later, the, you know, I don't know, clock at the town hall starts chiming.
Oh shit, oh shit. Wait, that Order of Time episode we did with the book review.
Oh yeah.
We know about this shit.
We know.
Local time, like the paradoxes of the universe and shit, right?
I vaguely remember.
I wasn't even going
to
go there.
Okay, someone please listen to that. All of you listen to that episode and you'll understand that Sahel and I are making a callback.
But is it like the church bells didn't cause the clock to go off? They both were programmed to go off, or you know, at a certain time, you know, but they both happened, you know, they were correlated in time.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they weren't caused by each other.
Oh, okay. I get it.
I think that's a big misunderstanding. I think we most people is, and it's human condition because we only see things in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And because we perceive the world as cause and effect, is that we apply that understanding to events that happen, but sometimes they aren't linked. You're right, it can be just two simultaneous events, right?
Kwesi's like, yeah, I've seen this all in my life, yes.
See, now you're just making out like I am just the old, you know.
He's the sage.
Yes, I'm just sitting here having lived through everything.
He's going to come out with some Ghanaian like sayings and stuff. Like,
so is there a way of like understanding the difference between correlation and causation?
Well, quite a nice funny place to start. Have any of you ever been on the Spurious Correlations website?
Yes.
Wait, what? That's a thing?
It's a thing.
So what this guy does is he sort of like plugs in loads of data, so like statistics to do with death or like sales of different products, and he sees what correlations come out of it. So the top one on the page at the moment, which has like a 99.79% correlation, is that US spending on science, space and technology correlates with suicides by hanging, strangulation and suffocation.
Yeah, I can completely see that.
Yeah.
Like when people are like, oh, Trump is going to make a space force. Nah, fuck this.
I'd rather die.
Nah, I'm out.
This is brilliant, by the way. I'm looking at his website. It's hilarious.
Okay. Or like, okay, here's one where like, you know, it's going to be really difficult for, I'm just going to like challenge Alex to come up with like ways that these two things could be caused. But divorce rate in Maine correlates with per capita consumption of margarine.
Maine is where Stephen King sets all of his books.
Exactly. Stephen King. And so that's where horror is from, right? Shawshank Redemption, everything else, The Shining. Look, so if you go to Maine, right, and like, oh, you're at the shops, like whoever's doing the shopping, they're spending too much money on butter. Like, why would you do that? Mm. Like, think about that. Mm. If you're buying, so imagine coming home, right? You come home and, you know, you've worked a long day, the money's in your current account, and you're like, why is the money not there anymore? What? Bam, you come home and there's a fucking like fort made out of, I can't believe it's not butter.
That's like a dream.
No, imagine that. And that butter goes off.
You've lost me at some point in this story.
Margarine. Margarine.
What is, I can't believe it, not butter. Is that not margarine?
This is so confusing now.
I don't know if it is.
Okay, okay.
I think I found my favourite one.
Okay, what's your favourite one?
Letters in winning word of Scripps National Spelling Bee correlates with number of people killed by venomous spiders.
I'm actually looking at this exact same one and it's so funny.
Yeah, no, I can't. I can't find the correlation.
There was a peak in 2004, just to let you know.
And what, in 2000?
Yeah. Wow. Number of people killed by spiders and spelling bees.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
If you've never seen the Scripps National Spelling Bee, it is actually fun. I know that says a lot about me, but I already have a doctorate in physics, so I feel like that thing has already been said. But yes, Spelling Bee.
This is a safe space to be dorky and nerdy.
Yes.
No, it's not. It's not at all.
Yeah.
So that's really, really cool. So that is what that is. The correlation, what's it called?
If you type spurious correlations into Google, you should find it. We'll also put a link in the show notes.
Okay, so people, you should head on to the spurious correlations website. And if you find anything really interesting, like send us a tweet or email it to us. I think we want to see the weirdest ones that you find. So, Kwesi, the reason you're on here, not just to talk about how bad various airlines are, it's because you have a pretty incredible job.
So, I'm a physicist. I have a PhD in physics from King's College London, and I now work at UCL, split between a lab in the biology department and a lab at the London Center for Nanotechnology, which is a lot fancier in sounding name than it actually does. And what I really do is I build microscopes and I spend my time looking at really, really small things moving around. Let's say, for instance, you are curious about the behavior of a protein inside your cell that is responsible for, let's go with something I'm actually doing, that's part of your immune system. This protein self-assembles into little rings. We want to know what these rings look like. And when I say little, I mean on the order of about the thousandth of the thickness of a hair.
Wow.
Yes. And we want to understand how these things work. So we either use atomic force microscopes, which, and I'm going to use a very dated reference here because I'm old. It's basically the equivalent of running a record needle across a really, really small sample to see what's there.
Mm.
Or we do this with fluorescence, which means we take the thing that we're interested in looking at, we do some fancy chemistry, and we stick on a dye that will glow in the dark. We shoot a laser at the dye. The dye gives us back light, and that light tells us where the thing is.
Wow.
Isn't that how they look at like what other planets are made of? They look at refractions of light and stuff.
Yeah. The physics is not that. So I do microscopy, which is on the small end, astronomy on the big end. It's both basically optics. On microscopy, we're using that to focus light down to look at really small things. On astronomy, we're using it to collect light from the sky, okay. So really large things.
Yeah.
And then once you have it, the techniques by which you figure out what's actually there are not that similar. So in astronomy, you're using at tiny spots of light that are out in space. Mm-hmm. In microscopy, you're looking at tiny spots of light that are inside a cell.
Yeah, but you're basically like detectives. Like you're using that piece of information to figure out what is contained within that, whatever you're trying to analyze, right?
Yes. Like let's be honest here. I'm one of those people who did physics because I didn't want to do biology. Mm-hmm. My science career in biology ended with a B in IGCSC biology when I was, 15, 16? I was like, yes, we're done. I will never see biology again. I will do physics. I will do maths. I will play with computers. I will, whatever else I do, I will even do chemistry. I will just never see biology again. We're good.
I like that your willingness not to do biology led you into chemistry and physics. inferior subjects.
I liked chemistry. I liked physics. Biology required me to memorize too many things, and I was therefore like, I have a terrible memory, so it didn't work for me. Physics? Well, no, the biology chef who took me for biology was not that. I did not enjoy his classes. That may have been part of it, but I did. I left secondary school thinking I will never see biology again, and I didn't. I went off to university. I got a physics degree. I got a master's in physics. But my master's in physics was in optics. And when you have an optics, when you have an optics degree, and when you are looking for PhDs in optics, a surprisingly large number of them involve building microscopes.
Is that not cool?
Oh no, microscope building in itself really cool. But
in my head, it sounds like the science version of model trains.
That's not a bad. It is sort of.
I'm trying to poke fun, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's a really good analogy.
hey, look, let's be clear. When people think about physics, they think really smart man sitting in a room doing, working on some maths and then going off to a giant board. No, I'm an experimentalist. No, I go into a room that has a bunch of optics in it and a bunch of electronics, and I plug things into things, and I set up a laser, and I point to a bunch of mirrors. And then I go stand by a computer and I turn on a camera and I see some spots of light glowing. And that's a really, if when I get to that point, that's a really good day. So it's not what people necessarily imagine.
So what is the coolest thing that you've done in your work?
I mean, any kind of single molecule imaging is cool by definition because you are looking at things that are, you're looking at individual molecules. So you're looking at things that are, say, a fraction of a fraction of a fraction. Like, they're so small that you would not see them with your eyes. You would not see them with a magnifying glass. You wouldn't see them with a regular microscope. You have to go that far down to be able to see them. And they're emitting light that is so tiny, it's, like a thousandth of the amount of light you get out of a candle.
Wow.
So really, really small. We're having to deal in the really, really small, the really, really sensitive. And we can see these things, and we can see enough of them so we can actually get numbers out of them. And we can take those numbers and we can then use them to actually figure out what's happening inside of your cells.
Okay, guys, this might be tell me if this is a silly question.
Mm. Yes.
But do you have to work in a really dark room?
Yes.
Okay, so it wasn't a silly question.
No, it wasn't a silly question. So the I say a nice thing. The really, really crap thing about working microscopes is we're looking at things that are really, really dim. So you need to be in a place where you have as little light around you as possible. So generally basements. If you're not in the basement and you happen to be, say, on a second or third floor, it's blackout windows. So in a week where I'm seriously running experiments, I will see the sun in the morning and at night and maybe at lunchtime.
So what you're saying is you're doing nothing to, like, change the stereotypes of physicists in a dark room. And, like, think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You... being a Ghanaian man, you need a lot of vitamin D. I might be the only one on this podcast who can tell you, but you're looking kind of pale, man.
I would disagree with you, except you're right. Like, I am actually a shade darker than this one.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Okay, I can't laugh because me too. Like, I am proper pallid right now.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Okay, so apart from physics, you fucking love judo.
Completely by accident. So,
what, you were walking down the street one day,
so backflip, some shit,
and someone said judo flip.
Damn, now I'm into judo.
Okay, not that much by accident, but not as far off as you think. Finished undergrad, moved back to Ghana. I worked in Ghana for a year and a half for a government research lab / training thing. It's a long story. You can ask me about it afterwards, but. I was working really long hours and eating lots of Ghanaian food, which we believe in putting pretty much oil and pepper into everything.
Ah, the staple of every good food.
Yeah.
Oil and pepper. I would eat that just by itself.
Yeah, I'm not complaining. I'm going to go home and cook this evening. I am not even going to claim that I am above this stuff, no. But when you are working, 6 days a week, and you're spending all of that time sitting at a desk and you're not doing any, you're driving to and from work, you might put an output of weight. Because there's Ghana and our people do not believe in, politeness or subtlety or anything of that nature, people will start to point out to you, hey, you're getting fat. In Ghana, telling someone they look fat is halfway between an observation and a compliment. In terms of, you get to look, you're looking flat, what it means, you're looking well. You are at the point where you are making enough so you can eat lots of food and gain weight. They're trying to be nice. But at the same time, it does get to a point where you look down like, my belly is surprisingly large right now and everyone is going to tell me about this, so I should maybe do something about it. And so that's why I was looking for something to do. There was a judo club reasonably close to work. A cousin of my friend's was going to that judo club, so I was like, okay, I'll go along and take a session. Mm. And I never left.
And so I know apart from that, you really love comic books. You never shut up about it. You love comics so much.
Yes. Well, let's be clear. It's not just comics. I do the full spectrum of nerdery here. Mm. So it is comics. It is science fiction. It is... What else? Not tabletop gaming. I've never actually gotten into tabletop gaming, so I skipped that. But outside of that, I think I have indulged in all of the other forms of nerdy that you're allowed to.
Massively into like nerdy movies, right?
Yes.
The reason like I say that is because Hannah has been going on about how scientists are the worst when it comes to movies. Like, are you one of those people that try to break down like the science of movies and stuff?
I would like to say no, but no, let's be... Yes, I am one of those people.
I'd just like to clarify here. Mm-hmm. I'm also one of those people. My issue is when people like completely mash that together with the quality of the movie.
Okay. That's a different thing altogether.
Okay, so what does that mean? So if they say that...
So one of the movies I really enjoyed recently was The Meg, right?
What's that about?
So that's about a... giant prehistoric shark sort of coming back from well, not the dead, but it's sort of it, how do I explain this without being like completely spoiling it? Basically, like a giant prehistoric shark that was thought to be extinct sort of comes back into the world. So I went to see this movie like expecting like a really really silly movie, and I was like pleasantly surprised, not just because I really enjoyed the plot line, there was actually, you know, enough believable science in there for me, but also because for the first, like, there were three absolutely like badass like female scientists and engineers in it, which you don't really get in movies. So but then I sort of like went home and I was trying to find out what a thermocline is, because I didn't know, which is it's sort of like a temperature differential in the ocean. And I just kept stumbling across article after article, which is basically like, this movie's shit because like the shark is 20 meters longer than it's meant to be.
Crazy, was that you?
No. Just wait, I haven't seen The Meg. I do want to see The Meg because I like Jason Statham movies. I'm super entertained by them. And also, it's a giant shark eating stuff. I am the kind of person who will... So there was a period in my life when I shared a flat with three other guys, two of whom did judo. And we would legitimately come back from judo on a Friday night, put on the Sci-Fi Channel, and watch the, like, you know, giant shark octopus hybrid killing a wolf.
I really want to watch that movie.
Sharknado 6.
I have seen more than one Sharknado film all the way through. I have seen Sharktopus. I have terrible tastes.
No, it's fine because you are hitting all their sweet spots. Like, Sahel's like, oh my god, someone else has seen Sharknado?
I have seen Sharknado. The man cuts open a shark from the inside with a chainsaw. What is there not to appreciate about this?
Does that happen?
Yes. Your cinema magic.
I'm told that in the book version of The Meg...
I thought you were going to say the book version of Sharknado. And I was like,
it's quite a lengthy read.
That would have
helped. In the book version of The Meg, I think Jason Statham's character like cuts... out, like his way out of the Meg, but that doesn't happen in
God
the film.
Damn, that's insane. So you saw on the reviews of the Meg scientists being shitty.
Yes.
So is that anything new?
I don't understand why people seem to spend so much of their time like in articles, on podcasts, like just breaking down the science in movies. Like I don't understand.
So Alex quickly edits the running order for the next three episodes.
I'm kind of 50-50 on this one. And first of all, as we have established, it is not as though I have the world's greatest taste in films. I have seen every Fast and Furious film. I will continue to see them for as long as they make them. I am not the guy you go to. I will also go see artsy stuff, but I am not the guy you go to if you're looking for someone to, you know, tell to just only recommend you serious, you know, scientific movies. At the same time, if the science is truly, if the science is bad, I reserve the right to go, okay, the science is bad here. I'm still going to enjoy this, but just so we're clear, the science is bad here. But then if it's a movie that claims to be about the science, then we wander into a completely different... So like a bunch of friends and I have this running argument about Interstellar, which is a great movie, but which at certain point, it's very close to the science all of the time, and at certain points just decides, nope, we're just going to ignore the science for the next half hour and then we'll come back to it. And that really annoys me because you told me you were going to be all about the science. You told me that you'd hired this amazing astrophysicist. You simulated a black hole so well that you got a paper out of it. And then at a certain point, you just went, nah, we're good.
But I feel like with Interstellar, there's almost, like, I found that almost, like, artistically problematic because it felt like the tone of the movie suddenly switched.
Yes.
And I guess that's what I had more of an issue with, was the experience of watching the film than the science being wrong.
What about, like, that film, for example? I 100% get you. And that film, like, The Day After Tomorrow, remember that film? Where the whole world ends and stuff. I enjoyed that film, but at the same time afterwards, I was like, is that even, would that even happen? Like, you know what I mean? And that, for me, that does take something, a little something away from the film sometimes.
So the very interesting about that is I saw that with my mum and on the way out, because, you know, okay, the film came out like over 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Okay. So at the end of it where, you know, there's been all this climate change and it's been freezing over, like all the people from like the northern parts of the world have to go into the southern hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, places like Mexico, South America, sub-Saharan Africa, you know, Australia. And my mom was like, yes, you see? And now when this happens, they'll be coming to us, you see? I will wait, you see? These are Bruni, they will come. And I'm there like, mom, it's a fictional, you see?
No, I'm completely with your mother on this. The thing is, I think it's just one of those, if you've ever had to live through the immigration system of any kind of Western country, You are waiting for the day. You're just praying for the day when they need a visa to your country and you're hoping that your guys are mean to them. You're like, what I want is for you to show up to the Ghanaian embassy wanting a visa and for the guy to just ask you questions. Like, are you sure you're going to come back? you have too many friends in Ghana. Where we don't trust that you're going to, you might just stay and never leave.
That's like, true. That's poetic irony.
So, Hannah, as someone who lived in Singapore for a lot of your life, do you wish for global climate destruction?
Listen, I grew up in the UK and I struggle with that, man. I'm like waiting to get into the airport. It's like, fucking hell.
So are there like any films, Hannah, that are particularly prone to having scientists like being dickheads?
I feel like there's absolutely no point with Jurassic like Park and Jurassic World because like the dinosaurs are so like not like anything we now know they would have looked like. That...
Yeah, so some paleontologists from my department went to go see Jurassic Park and properly framed it as, let's go see what's wrong with the film. And they were like, oh, we sat with the film and we laughed because it was so bad. I was like, mate, you still paid the £8 to get in? I'm like... You wasted your money.
It's a bit of like elitism in a way. And to be honest, I watched Jurassic World. I know you liked this film. I thought it was really bad.
I didn't actually enjoy it that much.
Yeah, exactly. And it wasn't a bad film because of the science. It was a bad film because it was a bad film. Yeah.
But the story was just so shit.
It is bad. Not good.
The dinosaurs were the best thing. And that's then they tried to put a story on top of the dinosaurs.
But the thing is, we're talking about the subject. It's like, all right, you don't need to have the science to make a film good. It doesn't need to be accurate. But sometimes that can add a lot to the film, make it much more engaging, make it much more of a more complete film. It makes it like they put more thought into it and makes it more a finished, more polished product, I think. Yeah. And that can be more, you know, it brings you in more. It makes it more believable, doesn't it?
There's this concept like called suspension of disbelief, like when it comes to any fiction, the idea that in order to truly enjoy a fictional book, a movie, anything, like you need to be able to, you know, immerse yourself in that world and not have anything that sort of makes you think this isn't quite right. You know, like you need to suspend your disbelief. And I think when the science veers too off track, especially in a movie like Interstellar, where they've already set it up to be, you know, scientific, that you sort of suddenly start there going, oh, I just don't believe this anymore. So,
how can it loses something, doesn't it?
Yeah. I do think, like, I can kind of see what gets people to that point in the sense of the. So, if we were to go see a movie and the characters were not at all believable, they didn't act like regular people, we would go, this doesn't work because regular people don't do this.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a movie where the world does not behave like a world that we're used to, I can see it. There are times, it depends on the film. So for certain films, it gets to the point where like, okay, this world that you're trying to, you want me to care about, does not look or act like any world that I actually recognize. Now, the thing that makes a difference for me is are you going to follow through on this? So, for instance, there's a reason I am not going to critique the physics of the Fast and the Furious films in any kind of serious way.
What, are you saying that Tokyo Drift doesn't adhere to the laws of physics?
Yes, I believe that's exact. I'm saying that Vin Diesel should not be able to drive a car off a ramp into a helicopter. And
does that actually happen? Does that actually happen?
Oh, so you've seen all the Sharknado films, but you haven't seen Fast.
I haven't seen Fast and Furious. I don't drive also, so I think that...
Oh, but you fight sharks.
I regularly fight sharks several times a day, in fact.
I haven't seen a single Fast and Furious.
You are missing out.
There's nothing that appeals to me about them.
I will grant you, it has been pointed out to me that they are problematic on gender. So I can grant you that is a solid reason to not give your money to those films. However, they also have Vin Diesel and The Rock fighting after they've both been basically covered in baby oil. I just feel the need to put this out there.
But you had a good point. You're talking about how in certain films it makes sense to suspend your disbelief. You don't certain universes you won't critique that universe. We're talking about Dragon Ball Z, right?
Yeah.
You wouldn't critique the physics of Dragon Ball.
Yes.
The fact that Goku can fly and all this stuff, but certain films that happen in the real world that you expect to follow the laws of physics, then if it does get, talking about Interstellar, for example, that was a good example.
It's that slight elitism, that's what I was saying, when you're ruining it for someone else. So I can sort of see people in your lab going to see like Jurassic World just to take the piss out of it, because they probably enjoyed that as a group.
Mm.
I think it's trying to say this other group of people should not enjoy it because of X, Y, Z.
Yes.
I think that's when it's
the you are stupid because you did not get this. At that point, you're just being an ass. Like, don't do that.
Mm.
But at the same time, I remember in my undergrad, a bunch of guys for a class project sat around and calculated. Has everyone here seen the original Star Wars films?
I'm missing some of them. I've like watched a few out of order.
Okay.
Yes, I have seen it.
Okay, so Return of the Jedi, third of the original Star Wars films. You have the Death Star, giant space station floating in space. It explodes fairly close to a planet, and so they tried to calculate how much damage would this do to the planet. And they sat down and they worked it out, and it was entertaining because literally everyone on the planet should have died when the Death Star exploded. But at the same time, it wasn't like that meant we don't enjoy this film anymore. It was just here's a fun thought experiment. Here are the ways in which the actual world would have looked if we weren't in your universe with its special weird physics.
You've got to suspend your disbelief when there are tiny bears which can match an army of specially trained warriors. If you can be taken down by tiny bear people with spears, I think at this point, like, we're in a completely different world. All right, so suspension of disbelief, but...
Can I devil's advocate for those people just slightly?
Okay.
So, and this is, I think, a tiny issue. I don't think it's a big enough issue to warrant it, but there is the problem of people start to think that stuff is real.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. Then if you have people sitting around thinking, oh, yes, if there is a disease, you know, we will come up with a cure and in between, like, the next 30-minute break of this TV show. Yeah.
Belittles the actual science in a way, does it? Or is that what you're trying to say?
I mean, there is that thing of the CSI effect.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. The CSI effect is that because in... there's two CSI effects. One is that a billion people wanted to study forensics afterwards, including me. But the other CSI effect is that we now have a general population that thinks that, you know, you just find some DNA and you can figure out who the killer was, or, you know, you find one fingerprint and it's, you know, conclusive, you know, evidence that someone definitely, like, you know, was the thief. Whereas actually forensic science is way more complicated than that. And there's, you know, there's error margins and, you know, people have DNA in common, even, you know, like they might have markers in common, even if they're unrelated. And so, yeah, you know, science in that context is not an absolute.
One last thing, just to finish off, I'm going to the 10 most scientifically accurate films. Have you guys heard about this?
No.
So let me tell you a few. So the most scientifically accurate film is apparently A Space Odyssey, 1969. Does it surprise anyone?
Do that.
No?
I mean,
I can see that.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. The Andromeda Stain is number 2. Alien, 1979, is number 3.
Wait, hold on for a second.
Wait,
Alien
is the most scientifically accurate film, apparently.
The film about face hugging aliens with acidic flesh, like we are talking about, which is a great movie.
Is it
by
just
the
because
way?
It's gone so hey, far I'm, away from all the science we know that we?
I'm
have
just the messenger. I'm just the messenger. Next is Blade Runner, 1982, the most scientifically accurate. Terminator okay. after that.
Oh fuck off.
Jurassic Park next, the original.
Wait,
1993.
Wait, so this list is saying how shit it is. Your list is saying
how good it is.
How good it is.
So, I have questions I think wrote that list, because that list has
problems. But yeah, that's the list. So mm-hmm. clearly, there's disagreement even amongst the community. Scientific community, I guess.
Look, at the end of the day, these lists, these articles are written by people who want to get paid to make content because, like,
it's all a little bullshit.
Difficult. Yeah. Yeah. So we've come to the end of the podcast. We have learned that correlation and causation are not the same thing, that tonsils are the worst, and we've learned that scientists are the worst when they try to break down films, even though there's a lot of devil's advocates here. We've been joined by Kwesi. This has been Why Aren't You a Doctor Yet? See you next episode.
See you soon.
See you soon. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.